This is professional radio, gentlemen.
And it's front wheel drive.
Scotty, have you got anyone you want to thank?
Just myself.
And now I do the after hours.
Gentlemen, what would you go for?
Thanks to your sin, dude.
Okay, and because it's not a supercar.
But it is.
It's not.
Automotive perfection comes in the form of two letters, A and U.
Long live my LTD.
Welcome to Car Talk. It's Tuesday night here on 98.9 Northwest FM. It's me, Matty J, in studio with Mr. Alamdeep Singh, online with Mr. Edward Bunting, David Prince, and Mr. Scotty Doe Johnson. How are you guys?
Good evening.
Well, indeed. Thanks.
Matthew, good evening, Alan.
Doing pretty good, thanks.
So that's what I like to hear, gentlemen. Let's crack on with some car updates, guys. Scotty Doe, big updates with you, my friend.
It's nothing good.
You got to take the good with the bad, Scotty.
It's nothing good.
It's like a roller coaster in your garage.
Oh, it is.
Emotional time. Oh. Yes.
Drains my soul.
The last we heard, Scotty, the R31 was finally on, or last I heard, the R31 was finally on club plates. It was drivable, and everyone was rejoicing in the streets.
Yeah, I was too. I thought, you know what?
Basically, the world was just completely, you know, in awe of, like, everything you were touching, Scotty, was turning to gold.
Everything was falling in place. It was amazing.
The Midas touch, but not the Midas deal. The Midas, yeah. Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then I thought, you know what? Sunday, what a nice day to just get out for a bit of a spin and see how it goes. So that's exactly what I did. Went out for a drive. It did the whole typical where it's always been very rough going from first to second, but I read about it and everyone's like, oh yeah, they're always rough going from first to second. But it tends to just hold first for ages and it revs and holds to like 4.5 till you get to a certain speed and then it'll go bang and slam you into second. And I thought, oh gee, okay. And then once it's in second, you got to get some speed up and then it might drop into third for you. I thought, okay, I'll just have a go at going on to a Lancefield Romsey Road and I'll just cruise up. Thought I'd cruise all the way up for a bit of a drive and give it a run there and doing 100. So I'm there going, getting up to speed, didn't take too long to get up to speed. It was all right. And sitting on 100. And then I'm not sure if it's slipping or something. And then all of a sudden my speed will start to drop and I got to press the accelerator more. Picks back up, gets back to 100 again. And then I just ease the accelerator a bit and just keeps it there, the speed. And then it does it again and it starts dropping speed all the way back down, you know, wipes off 8-9 Ks and I got my foot back down again and it kicks and goes back up again. Like, this is weird. It just feels like
that's
it gets pulling
like
back.
Battery, isn't it? That sort of thing.
And then going and then kind of back. I thought, this is odd. It's just not staying in the gear that I really want it to. And then I got to Clarkfield and I thought, no, I'll stop here. I'll swing around. I don't know how accurate the temperature is. It wasn't getting high, but it was just a little bit above to what I'd normally seen. So I sat there before turning around and just did a free rev and see how it went. Revved fine. There was no hiccups or anything when I just revved it. Swung around and started driving home. And then it seemed to sit fine. It was all good. I was like, oh, okay, this is how it's meant to feel. Maybe it was just a little bit rusty. It hasn't really sat in fourth gear, you know, in the overdrive for God knows how long. Yeah. And we just cleaned out some cobwebs. Plodding along, do-do-do-do-do. And then I come to traffic lights. And then when I went to take off, it just did not want to take off. It was like it was stuck in fourth. It was it just did not want to go anywhere. Like, what the hell? So I coaxed it along. It finally got to the speed I wanted to, and then I'm turning and I'm heading back home. And then it was going like even slower, just not going. I'm like, and I'm putting my foot past 50% throttle and no kickback, nothing in the gears. It was just staying where it was.
Mm. Oh,
that's not ideal.
I'm like, okay, that's weird. And then I planted my foot to get a kickback. And it did. It kicked back and revved all the way up, but I didn't move any faster. I was still doing the same speed.
Oh.
I was like, oh.
Transmission no good.
I was like, oh, it didn't like that. It was a bit grumpy. And then I kind of coaxing it home, and it's just like, doo, 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 and it's trying to find a gear. And when it gets one, there's like this loud click, clunk sound. I'm like, oh God, can I get it home? I got it home fine. Reverse works perfect. So I had to reverse it back in. It was fine. But if I put it in drive and I don't use any accelerator, it'll coast fine. But once you kind of want a gear or do something, you can't
coast your way around the streets, Scott. That doesn't work.
No, I'd have to put the hazards on.
Is that an Aussie transmission? Is that like a Borg Warner in it? It is, yeah.
Might be Jacko.
Okay.
But those trannies in that R31, they're not known for being terrible, I don't think.
They're known for being a bit agricultural, I know that. Like
maybe agricultural, but they're not known for being a bad transmission that sort of goes back in time. But yours has done some Ks, hasn't it, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, the odometer stopped at 250,000, so I don't know how many.
Anything beyond 250 on a tranny is you're in sort of good luck territory, you know?
Yeah. And then I thought, you know what, I'll put some fresh fluid in it. Maybe that'll do something. Maybe the gods will shine down on me again. So doesn't have a drain plug or anything. You got to dump the whole pan. That was a pain in the ass because some of those bolts are a ball breaker to get to. And obviously safety is important. So it took me a while to find a good spot for the jack stands and all that jazz. Dropped it. And then you saw the picture of the metal on it.
Yeah. Oh, so there was there metal in the oil?
On the magnet.
Oh, yeah. That's
on the bottom of it. But it wasn't as bad as I thought because you'll normally get kind of metal pasting. It's if you get kind of bigger chunks is when it's really bad. And I don't think it really had too many big chunks. It was very pasty attached to it. But I guess it wasn't as red as it should be, the fluid, compared to the new fluid. So I dumped all that. Put in fresh new fluid. Thought, okay, take it for a drive, see how it goes. Run around the block, didn't really make much difference. Engine heated up again. You know, it was like a 10-minute drive, if that, and it felt too hot in the engine bay and that. But that's, I think, would probably come from the transmission being ruined. So there's too much heat in the transmission, which is pushing heat into the engine bay.
Generating, yeah.
Yeah, because it's all connected because it runs through the radiator, so...
And that radiator and cooling system is okay, isn't it?
Brand new
radiator I put in it.
It sounds like it could be.
So I think the transmission and the torque converter and that is just stuffed. So it's generating heaps of heat while it's flowing through. And there's only so much a radiator can do to support cooling that plus the engine itself. So it's just heating up.
Plus it was a warm day.
Yeah, it was a bit warm during the day too. I mean, as I said, it didn't get to a point where I was like, oh, my God, I got to turn the car off.
Yeah. Are you going to fix the auto, put another second handy in, or go straight to the manual conversion?
There's absolutely no point in me chasing up getting an auto unless someone's got one for like $50.
Yeah.
And then I quickly slap it in or something. But I've pretty much got everything ready for a manual conversion. But... it's just a couple pieces I need, but that costs money and just don't have the funds at the moment, which kind of sucks.
That's so awesome.
I was telling Scotty, you should have put this stop slip.
Yeah.
Didn't they used to put bananas in gearboxes?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, bananas.
Put it in a whiny dip, you know.
True.
It's not all I got to do, just buy some bananas.
That's right. Easy.
Can't be any worse.
Yeah, so
that's disappointing, mate.
Yeah, so I think because everything that came with the kit to change it to manual, it does come with a clutch and everything already, but I thought it'd probably be smart to buy a new, fresh clutch.
Why?
Well, I mean, you know.
You can tell if a clutch is good. You look at the meat.
I guess so.
Does that like they go off?
Well, I was thinking, look, if I went and got a new clutch, then I'd have to stuff around and polish and redo the flywheel too, yeah? If I keep the clutch that's already got and the flywheel, I don't have to do anything to the flywheel. I can just go bang, bang.
Hang on, is that a second?
You
can just throw it in, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why it can't be used, but...
Only if the flywheel would need machining, which you'd probably already know, given its condition. If it's a pretty clean flywheel,
well, I thought every time you'd machine a flywheel is if you are putting on a brand new clutch.
I wouldn't say that's always the case.
I mean, you could take...
You might get heat spots and stuff, so you kind of want to start fresh.
You could take the flywheel and the clutch to someone who does gearboxes and say, can you just make sure these two are meshing together nicely if they had to shave a mill off or something or whatever, great. But then at least they're meshed.
Any mechanic would just put their what's it called?
Strategy
and be able to tell. Or they'll just machine it with they used to machine brake discs. So shouldn't take too long. But yeah, so is it just the clutch, the flywheel? Is that the only two things that you want to replace and it should be good? Or have you got everything ready to go?
Everything's ready to go. I just got to get some bolts for the belt housing and stuff like that. But you can get those anywhere. I've got a whole list of what size bolts it all uses, the flywheel bolts and the belt housing bolts. I've got all that.
And in terms of ECU, does it run with the auto ECU or?
Yeah, I don't need to change that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need. Nah, I've got everything. Comes with all the lines. It's got the brake, clutch, booster. It's got everything ready to go. The surround for inside it, the boot.
Oh, it sounds like your set day's sorted then.
Yeah. Got his weekend taken care of.
If only it was that easy.
Oh, that's all I need. I've got the tail shaft and everything. I need the transmission cross member.
Okay.
Because it's the auto one. You've got to make new holes if you want to use the auto.
Okay. So, and is that easily accessible or?
Yeah, there's one made by RB Factory that make them.
Okay.
So that's easy peasy.
Yeah.
Other than that, that is it. I have everything. I have the whole kit. It's just an RB20 gearbox, but it's been all freshened up.
Yeah, no. It'll be fine for that power anyway.
Yeah. Piece of cake.
I'm excited, Scotty. Excited to see it. But apart from that, everything else is okay.
Excited for that, but, God, it's just a pain in the butt, that.
Yeah.
Other news, I guess the Subaru is up for sale.
Any bites?
No bites, but if I have a look at the searching so far, I have 4 saves and 48 views.
Well, it's something.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah, so it's up for sale for $6,800, which from the look at some of the other ones on there, I was just looking at other ones that are on car sales and kind of basing it on there. Seems to be about right with kilometers. And I mean, mine comes with at least all the original books and things compared to anybody else's. So people like that, all the books, all the documents. And not long ago, it had all the rocker cover gaskets and all that. And I've got the receipts.
A lot of car for $6,800.
Yeah. Don't have to worry about the twin turbo stuff either. So, yeah.
Why not?
Because it's single turbo now.
Oh, you converted it?
I was already converted when I bought it.
A lot of people with those, that they had to convert them because the all the lines, like all the what's called the airlines, not airlines, the all vacuum, the factory, vacuum lines, they just crack and have massive issues. So it's quite often that people just single turbo convert them because it's just easier and more reliable. That's a very common upgrade on that.
No, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Edward, updates with you.
Hello. I've been a bit busy. Can't remember where we got to last time I spoke to you, but what have I been doing? I had a Holden Barina. Do you remember the Barina? Sold the Barina. Happy new owner. That's gone. Honda Civic I still have that 2001 Honda Civic. It's been dragging from mechanic to mechanic. Basically, it needed a front left shock because it was weeping as part of the roadworthy items. And I just replaced that, or I had it replaced. But then, of course, when you replace one shocker, the car is a little uneven going over jumps and things. So I really had to replace the second one. And I thought I might get away with it, but really I should have stopped being tight ass and just done both. So it's now getting the front right shocker done as well. So that's still in the wings. The Hyundai Tucson that I purchased, the newest car I've ever owned, I think 2021. I don't think you can get much newer than that.
Tucson.
That is in just getting a roadworthy, which it shouldn't need anything. I'm picking it up tomorrow, and then I'll put that online. I should put that on tonight, actually. So that's the next one to go advertised. I also purchased a 1997 Saab 900S two-door Talladega automatic, turbo 2.3.
Talladega.
One owner. Now, the Talladega, according to my research, gets you alloys. It gets you, you know, the color-coded bars and stuff, and it's got the rear spoiler. And I think that's about it. So
it
erased
the Talladega before it got delivered.
Oh, yeah, So it's not exactly an amazing option pack, but it's makes it a little bit nicer than your plain Jane hubcap model, I suppose. But that's, two-door in silver and one owner, you know, brilliant service history, two keys, factory mats, you know, it's a by and large a well-looked after car. So I picked that up Friday, and it had sat around for about a year and a half, not being used. And, of course, I like to drive things that haven't been used. And so I pumped the tyres up, took it through the car wash, blasted all the dust off it, and pointed it straight to Bendigo. And I didn't turn it off during any of that because the battery was totally dead, and I was paranoid it wouldn't start again. So, you know, I went home and left it running in the garage, and then I left it running at the car wash. And anyway, by the time I got up to Bendigo, 2 hours later, battery was perfect, charged right up, no drama.
Doesn't matter.
But as I was coming to my friend's house in Bendigo, I was doing about 70K or so, and a big fat kangaroo came out from the bushes on the left and jumped in front of my Swedish Express.
You're kidding.
I slammed on the brakes, and to its credit, the Saab ABS worked very well, and I ground to a halt pretty quickly. I did still hit the kangaroo in the middle of the front bar. He then came up onto the bonnet and then sort of rolled off the driver's side and out into the bush and hopped away. Thankfully, he hopped away and didn't lie.
Did you get his insurance details, Ed?
You left the scene. That's outrageous.
My first thought, Alan, was, that's a $600 car. What am I worried about? You know, like, this is a cheap. I didn't pay a lot for this car. Anyway, but I thought, suppose I better pull over and look at it. So I pulled over and
left it running.
Oh, left it running, of course.
No, well, he had to turn off because the kangaroo was going to jump in the driver's seat and take off.
Yeah, I left it running.
It was a sting operation. They really wanted it.
Skippy wanted new wheels. So I get around to the front of the Saab with my, and it's very dark by this stage, with my little phone torch. And I thought, where's the damage? The bar looks fine. The headlights aren't crunched. The bonnet's not all dented up. I thought, this is unbelievable. Like, did that just happen? And all I could see was the grill was pushed in, the plastic grill was just pushed in about an inch maybe. And I just got the bottom of it and went boom, and it just popped back out to where it's meant to be. And that was it. And I stood there looking at it thinking, that's unbelievable. Like, I hit him reasonably hard. There was a bit of fur in the grill. You know, I noticed that, a bit of kangaroo fur.
So it did happen. It wasn't a figment.
It did happen. I didn't imagine it, but remarkable. And I thought, well, that's a good old solid Saab for you. They're designed to hit elks and moose and things in Scandinavia. So I was very happy with that car. And it drove really well. Doesn't overheat. You know, so I'm enjoying being a little Swedish mole for a few days, you know, see where that goes.
I want to add to that. I really like those. I like an early 900, or like any 900, really. I think they're actually they're a well screwed together kind of
bus. Yeah. And my friend, you know, used to be a Saab. He's been on a couple of times, Rowan. He's an ex Saab Master Tech. And he said, you know, some of the 900s that were turbo or this or that had, you know, they could have various issues. But he said that 2.3 plain Jane non-turbo with the auto is a very tough mechanical package. He said very little goes wrong with them other than timing chains maybe. They, you know, he said if it's got a noisy chain, you have to put tensioners and a chain in it. But he goes, other than that, they really never did anything while he was working on them, and that was years. So, you know, I'm reasonably confident that would be a good car for someone.
Absolutely.
Nice. There's actually a plain Jane, well, talking about plain Jane being the just the regular 900i engine, but the earlier shape in a convertible in blue. In a manual with the fabric interior, so non-turbo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Convertible. They put that out later in the run, about 92, I think, just right at the end of that first shape.
Yeah.
And it's about, I think it's about $8,500. Oh, it's a lovely little car.
Very nice. That could be a bit of you, David.
A bit of me.
I know you're quite partial to an old Saab, aren't you, David?
I do love an old Saab. Yeah.
Oh, it's certainly a car that very solid feeling on the highway. You can tell it's a front drive, but for a front drive, it's actually really well balanced and really solid. And just even the fuel cap, I filled it up, you know, and most cars you pop the fuel cap and it's plastic fantastic. You know, the rest of the car's metal, but the fuel cap's not. This is a metal fuel cap. It's incredibly solid. So little things like that have impressed me with the Saab. And anyway, on the weekend, the reason I was going to Bendigo was, well, I was leaving from there to go to Classic Japan in Adelaide, which is the premier sort of Japanese car show for South Australia. And we drove over, Tommy, who's been on this podcast before, and I drove over in his 1986 Subaru Touring Wagon. So this is the L Series manual touring wagon. And that car, he's done quite a bit of work to that. It's really clean. But it has been sitting for 10 years. So he did water pump and timing belt and, you know, shockers front, rear, you know, oil service, blah, 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 you know, just resurrected it. That thing ran beautifully. It was a delight to drive there and back. The ride was surprisingly good. The seats were surprisingly comfy. It's not a big cabin, but the seats in those were very good. And so it just didn't put a foot wrong, you know, and it was really... Like Tom and I sort of both commented, hey, this is fine. Like, this is how people got around in 1986. This is not a terrible old, horrible, oh my God, will it make it car? It just wasn't. Anyway, Japanese car show, I won't dwell on it too much, but that was good. There's the new section with all the doof doof stickers, lowered, modified, just makes me want to vomit. And then the other section that is more me. That's the actual sort of retro classics. And there's a Bongo van and a couple of beautiful MR2s, Maddie. There was a red one that was minty, mint, like yours, very nice. There was, you know, a beige Pajero two cars down from me with the high roof and the beige vinyl. It was like beige on beige. And yeah, it's just cool retro stuff like that. So that was good. But on the last day, yesterday morning, when we were coming back, Tom wanted to get something from a wrecker, which was about 20 minutes south of Adelaide. This is like a Jolly's, you pull it. So we drive down 20 minutes south of Adelaide and very well laid out wrecker, you know, nice and neat like Jolly's is here, quite nicely done. But the cars in the wrecker, they're like 15 years, 20 years behind where we are in Melbourne. There was old stuff. There was a line of Beetles. In the wrecker.
What?
Wow.
There were five Peugeot 505s in the wrecker. There were four Peugeot 404s, sorry, 504s in the wrecker. There were five Jaguar XJ6s in the wrecker. Like stuff that I have not seen in a Melbourne do-it-yourself wrecker for years. It was there and it was reasonably complete. And I thought, my God, like, when was the last time you just walk into a wrecker in Melbourne and go, oh, yeah, I need a wheel for my 504. There it is. Like,
it's almost worth a trip to Adelaide if you knew.
Well, David, I took some photos for you of a couple of Honda Accords that were in there, the three-door model.
Nice.
And being a Mitsubishi town, you know, being Adelaide, there were about three entire rows of Magnas.
Oh, wow.
I did take a photo of a grey Gen 1 wagon for our friend Andrew, the same as his car. But, Magnas are plenty. And I did say that to Tom. I thought, if you knew what they had in stock and were sort of wanting a little getaway, it wouldn't be a crazy idea to go over there and milk a wrecker like that. Just can't get busy.
I think that's one of them. I mean, imagine how many.
Yeah, that's just one. I mean, there will be more that we didn't get to.
Well, I want to add to that because the SA's got a lot less stringent rules for registration than we do. And when you buy a car there, you don't have to do a roadworthy process. You can just put in your name. So when you're there, and Steph can attest to this, when you're there, like a lot of younger people drive really old cars because they pay $300, $400, $500 for them, drop them till they die and get another one. You know, like the car demographic is quite like the.
The car park there, the average age is older than other states, definitely.
Absolutely, 100%.
And it's sort of, unless you live right on the coast, it's relatively nice climate. You know, it's sort of dryish. And the roads are pretty good over there. It's not a hard, there's no traffic, so it's not hard on cars, you know, in terms of stop start like Sydney. So I think, I think it's a nice little mecca of slightly older stuff in SA. So I was pleasantly surprised.
Magnapalooza.
What's that?
Magnapalooza. Magnapalooza.
So that was fun. In other news, and I'll show up in a minute, I'm picking up my Echo from the mechanic this week. That's got a roadie that's going in for Reg Monday. The little three-door auto Gen 1 Echo with that cool old interior, you know, the aqua sort of interior. So I'll sell that soon, and then I'll put the Saab in when that goes and see what that needs for roadie, which is probably...
That's an auto, isn't it?
That's auto, yes. That's an auto. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that is all my car news.
David Prince.
I have a lot of car news at the moment. I've been a bit busy with other stuff in the last couple of weeks. Let me think. I've had the purple Z360 hard top at my place, and I've been doing a few bits and pieces to that, just detailing it up. And that car was looking like it was going to be disposed of. It's one of these classic shared cars that often people in car clubs have that has numerous owner claims to it. But really, it's such a sweet little car that turns every time starts every time you turn the key. I just think, I don't know that you're going to find the person that's going to give you what it's worth from the point of view that where are you going to find another one? Like it's well sorted, no rust, starts and drives. They don't take up much space. It got a really good reception at the last highball, but it hadn't been there before. But yeah, it's such a cool little car, a Honda Z. For those that are listening that don't know what it is, if they remember the Aussie film Malcolm, the car that split in half, it's one of those. It's one of them. But this is actually the water cooled version. There was an air cooled and a water cooled, and it's the hard top version. So it's pillarless and it's 4 inches longer. Typical Mr. Honda, being the engineer that he was, nothing actually is interchangeable between the air cooled and the water cooled. So frustratingly so, but yeah, that's a really cool little car. So I've got some room to work on it. The moment the garage has my red N360 scamp and the purple Z in it. So it's a genuine early K garage at the moment. The N1's being prepared for sale, because I'll be moving that one on now that I've decided to bring a manual in from Japan, which the colour and spec that I want is proving a little elusive at the moment, but one will turn up. I'm not in any great hurry.
Yeah.
Knowing now that I doubt it'll take as long as the last one did to organise, and with in the middle of COVID, that took nearly a year to get here, but I think the timeline's much better now. But that's about it. I was thinking about tonight earlier in the day as I'm driving my Volkswagen and the transmission squeaking between first and second.
Again.
Oh, they didn't fix it last time I was in for service, but I reported it because they will be fixing it. Still got 18 months of warranty left, so I'll be getting that fixed probably this
time. Didn't it have the clutches all done?
Yeah, 35,000 Ks it did. Yep.
It had all the clutches done.
I don't know if it had them all done. I mean, of course, with warranty, they don't usually tell you. You know, they just we fixed it, you know.
But it was gearbox out.
Yes, I presume so. I had a small loan car.
That was 35,000 K. And how many Ks are we on now?
49, it says on it now.
Wow. Yeah, so not that long later.
And look, it hasn't stopped. The car hasn't left me marooned or overheated or slipped. Like, it still works, but every time it changes between gears now, it sort of whistles at me. So Anyway.
Still better than my gearbox.
Well, as I was saying that, Scotty, I thought things are relative, aren't they, you know?
I wish mine just whistled.
Yeah, that's right.
Mine clunks and doesn't want to go in any gears.
Yeah.
Given that there's a few decades difference between the gearboxes.
There is a few decades. I nearly said when
Those ones should probably be doing a bit better.
Should be doing better, yeah.
I nearly said when you were talking about yours, is it a DSG? But no, it's Japanese DSG. So look, the van's great. It's just the gearbox box does drive me a bit crazy. And I figured when I bought it, I thought, well, we'll see how this goes. You know, I couldn't get a manual when I wanted it. So another manual. So anyway, me not complain.
Alan.
I think last time we spoke about the MX-5 and I forgot the name of them. The coil packs.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that I was going to put a new set of coil packs. So I ended up getting a set of those. I think it was about 160 odd, somewhere in there. I only need to get two because it shares the coil between two cylinders each. I also got the extra leads to go from the coil pack to the other cylinders just to make sure that it wasn't either of those. So I got those in, got home, took off the old coil packs. I always, you know, you should probably, every mechanic most likely does it. It's something I wouldn't have done normally. I decided to have a look at both the coil packs just to make sure they're right. One of them, the new ones, the little cover that I guess attaches to the spark plug itself, that was not on properly.
Mm.
The rubber had kind of gone over the point where the coil would actually touch the spark plug. So if it fitted that would have started misfiring like crazy.
Right away, yeah.
I would have been confused. Mm. So I took that off, refitted it, make sure it sat properly, put a little bit of dielectric grease in, and then fit them all. And the car sprung to life immediately. Like normally I'd crank it for at least 1.5 seconds and then it'd start up. Now within like half a second, it basically starts.
Oh, wow.
So I definitely think they were on their way out.
Mm-hmm.
And so far have not had a misfire issue. But at the same time, I think that one was after a few months. So I'm still, you know, holding out, but I did end up doing probably about 500 Ks on the car. And now my brother-in-law has taken it. Because his car's at the mechanic getting new springs, which he decided the mechanic's a good guy, but he's a bit unreliable in terms of timing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how about you wait till he gets the suspension in, the new shockers and struts? And he's like, no, I'll just send it and he'll bring it. And now it's been like a week and a half and the car's still at the shop. So first they took the D-Max and now they took the MX-5. I'm like, we'd like the D-Max at home in case Dad wants to use it.
Yeah.
But he'll at least put some Ks on it. And if it does, I guess, show up again, I'll have a better idea. So I've done at least 500 Ks. I think he'll do probably within the week, somewhere on 200-300. So at least I'll know that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, so good. So, you know, fingers crossed that's the issue. The D-Max, with its automatic lights always being on. No, that was just me driving the car in the later afternoon. It was not a car issue. Driving the car in the morning or during, you know, proper sunlight. It was fine. The headlights were not turned on. So, you know, got it all done. Gave the MX-5 a wash and took the STI out a couple of times.
Hmm.
Because my brother-in-law sister had taken the D-Max, I actually ended up needing to take the STI out a few times, and I was happy about that. Like, I'm not fond of taking it to shopping centres because inevitable dings and everything else, but this time I parked super, super far away, and thankfully nobody had parked next to me when I came back.
Hmm.
So I was happy with my groceries and, you know, just drove home. And that's probably about it for me.
Very, very good. Nothing with me. So we will move on to tonight's topic, gentlemen, of cars that were unbelievably uncool now coming into their own and being cool. So, for example, the reason why I want to bring this up.
It's the AU Falcon, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the AU Falcon is the one and only choice here. But, you know, when you go to a Cars and Coffee and stuff, and you know, our good friend Mr. Andrew Rilsworth will completely attest to this. You know, you go there with a really basic car that's from a bygone era that people used to just scoff at and be like, oh, whatever, it's just an old Magna. To now being like, wow, that's actually unbelievably cool. You know, it's hard, but it's also weird to see that kind of turnaround. Now, I remember like old Corollas used to be. Not unless it was like an A86 or something, but like even then, sprinters were like they weren't really worth much. But like those K55s and stuff, they were just considered old cars. Like they weren't. But like even when they were new, like they weren't in better comments like cool car. But now it's completely sought after. So I want to leave it in your capable hands of what do you think now really kind of sought after and really kind of cool, even though they were very uncool. Now, I want to say Ed, you kind of inspired me because I was listening back to a few old episodes when you talked about your parents had a Nissan Irvan, yeah, and like unbelievably uncool. You didn't want to get dropped anywhere near school in it.
No, not.
But now, like vans are really cool at the moment. Like vans are really in, like Hiaces and Taragos and vans. Yeah, they're really cool.
Yep. Yeah, I think vans are a good example of an area that have become cool, particularly retro. I mean, there's always been a culture of camper vans are kind of cool, like combis and you know, if you had a Volkswagen, if you go buy a new Volkswagen multivan camper, even though it's an unreliable bucket of shit, it's cool. You know, there's no question about that in terms of the pop top and the accessories and the stove and the way they fit it all in. And so I think vans by their nature are cool. It's just that some they all go through that daggy non-cool phase and then hopefully they come out the other end and be cool again. It was amazing actually coming back from Adelaide how many egg Taragos I saw. Mm-hmm. Like on the road driving, I reckon I saw 7. You know, between Adelaide and Melbourne, just or around the traps, you know.
And not necessarily from the show. They're just.
None of them were from the show. None of them. Not one.
That's the thing. I mean, they just seem
still running. They are still running those things out there as transport. And I watched a movie, I watched a couple of episodes of Boy Swallows Universe. It's a, you know, mini series based on a book. It's very good so far, I've got to say. But yeah, he drives a Nissan Vanette. In the show, and it's a little beige thing with cool stripes. And at first, I thought it was a Light Ace, and then I said, "No, that's a Vanette." Mm. I thought, "God, where are they now? You just don't see those things."
And there's a very cool star sign Gemini pops up into that.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. That's true. There was a Gemini
star sign Gemini.
Mm-hmm. So we like vans.
Do you think vans in particular are like kind of an exception to the rule? Like if you see like a really cool Spectron with all the decals and then the graphics, that's just kind of cool now, right? Like that, it's got the middle swivel seat and everything. It's very cool.
Exactly right. It's very cool. But they were pretty daggy there for a while, those vans, I suppose.
There's a Nomad XE lives not far from us in Burwood. Still with the original, very cool alloys and the bars and everything, rusted as all get out. They're still going.
They're still going, still running. Mm-hmm. One sort of car that comes to mind as being not cool and then cool and worth money, some Japanese stuff like Datsuns. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my grandfather had a 240K sedan in a manual, and that, you know, there was a phase there where they were just jalopy, rust bucket, $500 cars. They were not sought after. No one was buying them and restoring them. No one was even giving them a second glance. And then suddenly, through this whole Skyline hype, it sort of dragged those gloppy Datsuns, as David would call them, into the view again of people. And they're like, oh, it's got the round tail lights like a Skyline, and it's Japanese, and it's a straight six motor, and oh, hang on a minute. And so, you know, I sort of can't believe what they're worth, you know, in coupe form particularly. But there's other Japanese cars along that line, like Mazda Capellas and stuff that I saw at the show on Sunday that were just cheap rubbish is now kind of cool and collectible because they're chrome bumper Datsuns, I suppose, you know.
Well, Capellas have always kind of, I mean, they weren't exactly cool, but they were always bought by people that put a rotary in them and went nuts. But to add to your Datsun, you know, point, like a 120Y is like a really cool car now, which is hard to believe. Like that's, it's, everyone's like, oh, cool, a 120Y. But I remember my
list.
Was that on your list?
Yeah, that was number one on my list.
My 120Ys were awful cars and sort of still are in a lot of ways, but
they were like the cockroach of the 70s.
Yeah, they were.
You couldn't kill them.
Having said that, on Sunday, I saw a green 120Y coupe at the show that was in, wasn't concourse, but it was in very tidy condition. But one thing I noted on it was it had all four original hubcaps and they were undamaged.
Wow.
If you know a 120Y hubcap,
they go out.
Screwed a long way out.
They did.
The edges of them are this ridiculously overcomplicated sort of metal spokes all around the edge and then this flat dish face. And they are so easily crunched on gutters. So 9 out of 10 of them are just destroyed. This car had a full set of glamour hubcaps. And I really stopped and admired that.
Oh, was that my hatch?
Yeah, it's hatch.
Yeah. They were the penultimate ugly duckling, I reckon, when they came out. Nothing nice about them at all, but you find a nice aqua one these days.
Mm-hmm.
Or yellow
My year four primary school teacher, she had a orange one, and it was a horrible car. The thing used to smoke, but she drove it every day and in and out. And
it probably still is, Maddie.
I had secondhand embarrassment because my teacher had the worst car in the school, you know.
secondhand embarrassment.
Yes. Wow. But you know, it worked, and I was like, oh, she got a 120. Why? Like, and as a kid, I knew what that was because I was just like, oh, you know, but now it's like, I was like, oh, that'd be the coolest car in the car park because one, it's still going, but two, it's got a bit of character and. Yeah, I remember a good friend of mine, Tyler. His mum had an early 80s Bluebird, like the real squarey kind of. I can't remember the model, but it was the worst car I've ever been in. It was falling apart. It still went, but it was just a miserable bucket of pus. Anyway, I remember.
It was the first four cylinder limousine. I'll have you know, Maddie.
Yeah, it was
the brochure.
Anyway, I remember. Tyler's mum was like, well, I've just got my new car's on its way. I finally ordered a new car. And I'm like, oh, great. Like, you know, like, what you getting? She rocks up in an AU Falcon wagon. I'm like, oh, like, you've gone from worst to worst. Like, what is wrong with you?
And the frying pan into the fire.
I remember just, and she was super proud of it. She was like, oh, I've got front electric windows. She's like, I didn't have that in the Bluebird.
Only front, not rear, only front.
But I remember, like, actually, I saw him a while ago, probably 2 or 3 years ago, and his mum's still got it. Like, she has her cars for very long periods of time, so she's still got the AU wagon. But yeah, it was. I remember just being in that. It was like that kind of greeny, like you know the color when you see it. It wasn't the nicest green, and it was two tone, and it had the orange lenses that were cracked and broken, and it was. Yeah, it wasn't a TRX, put it that way. But it's that one always stuck with me, and now I kind of see one. I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. I'd totally rock that. So David,
they're interesting because the guy that runs Highball has that shape Bluebird, but the one that he's got ended up it's like an 1980 or 79 model, which is we were still in 200Bs back then.
Yeah.
So the Bluebird came out in 82. But his is an 80 or an 81. And it was actually a car bought out by General Motors Holden to actually, before, you know, they knew Nissan were going to release the Bluebird in Australia. So it was to sort of position against the Chimera and pull it apart and see how it worked. So he ended up with that car. I think he had a relative that worked at Holden in the day, and they sort of put it all back together and sold them off sort of thing. Wow. So it's a full Jap-spec one, but the Australian cars had the better seats and they had a lot more local content to them and different bumpers and stuff to the JDM ones. But, yeah, I mean, my brother had one new and a wagon, had it for years and years and years, and then interestingly went into an EA Falcon. So, I mean, it was logical regression from that. But it was just a base GL fabric trim, rusted away, but really nice instrumentation at night. I remember the instruments were really well set out and, you know, like a Christmas tree, that all the colours of the rainbow on the instruments.
Such a dull car, though, aren't they? They're just...
Yeah, especially in GL.
Oh, base. Dully McDull, dull, dull.
Yeah.
Sorry for taking your 120Y on your list, David. That's I personally apologise for that.
That's all right.
What about you, Alan? What do you want on your list?
Apart from, you know, the almighty AU Falcon, which is now just
very cool.
A god tier car.
It's a god tier. It is a god tier car.
I think I'll give it to the Toyota Orion. Like, we're not okay. Not the TRD one, because the TRD one was always cool.
Yeah.
You know, but just a regular Toyota Orion.
Yeah.
Because it was always kind of the, as Jacob put it, the dad car. It's, you know, you want something cool and, you know, fast, but you unfortunately, you know, have to get something a little more responsible and family friendly. So you get that. It's got the V6, you know, it's reasonably quick. It's not going to win any races against the good stuff out there, but it's a pretty good car. And, you know, as they've aged, like, people, I think, unfortunately, they didn't sell very well in the first place, but people still try and hang on to them. And it's just one of those cars of, like, you, again, you're not going to win any kind of great competitions, but if you could have, like, the choice of a Camry or, like, you know, one of the other mid-sized sedans that are, like, let's be honest, really, really pedestrian looking. This is something where, like, you're still being responsible as an adult. You're still buying a car that, you know, you're not paying too much for. You're not going to spend too much on fuel, that sort of thing. But it has a sharp enough look where, you know, you're like, I'm a cool dad, you know?
Yeah. To add to that point, I always thought, like, when the Orions came out, it was like, when your mum said to you, like, when you ask your mum, hey mum, can I have some ice cream from the van, that, you know, the ice cream van?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, we've got ice cream at home, and the ice cream at home is the Orion.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like can I get an XR6? No, we've got an XR6 at home, and it's like a Orion ZR6. Like, it was, you know, that was the car in Compass for life for me.
Exactly. Like, it's a compromise car. But I think for that reason, it's cool. It's definitely more unique than every other XR6 on the road.
It is.
Again, it's not going to win any awards, but it does hold a special place, I feel.
Absolutely. Like, and they're a good drive. Yeah. Like, they're definitely a good thing. I like that one. I think that one's a cool one. They're definitely coming to their own over the last few years.
What about now?
Oh, Avalon.
They're not cool, though, are they? They're not cool.
Maybe their time will come. Who knows? I mean, if Andrew Ellsworth can drag the Magna out of the mire, we just need someone to do the same with an Avalon. Although I don't know where we'd find any. I mean, they didn't sell in great numbers. And
well, it's still out there because they're tough.
Yeah.
True.
They do, like, keep
going. A good friend, Jake, had an Avalon. Unfortunately, it got lost in a flood, which I don't think the car actually died. I think the starter motor just died because of the water. But the insurance decided to write it off for whatever reason. And the immediate car he went to look for was an Avalon. But he's like, look, if I can stretch the budget, I want an Orion.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he actually wanted. And he wanted the cooler dad car. I'm like, you don't have any kids, Jake. But again, he appreciates the comforts of, you know, a mid-sized car. So it's not super big that, you know, again, he's got no kids to take away, but he wants to give the homies a ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that's mid-sized kind of fits the bill really nicely.
Quite reliable. And yeah, it's funny, like, you laugh at some of these cars because, oh, you know, they were grandparents' car. And to be fair, they marketed the Orion to old people. Like, I remember the ad with, like, an old couple driving the car with, you know, and then every time I've seen one, like, it's got the, you know, the straw hat and the pasta shelf and all that. It was, I remember the ad was like, oh, my new Avalon V6. And I remember that ad. I'm like, they're even marketing it to old people. Like, Toyota's, there's no shame with Toyota. Like, it was just.
Isn't there the Hilux ad now, like a divorced couple?
Yeah.
And they're sharing cars.
Yeah.
I love that ad. I think that's a great ad.
It's a good ad.
None of these hold a candle to the 200 killer wasps.
Killer wasps.
Oh, yes, I remember that one.
No, Toyota's had some good ones. Bugger that was a good one. And yeah, but yeah, the Avalon. Let's see if that time will come. We'll see if straw hats on the parcel shelf is a coming back thing. But imagine a mint one rocking up at Highball, like a mint one, with like 20,000 Ks, driven by an old person all its life, like fully optioned with the alloys and everything, and just pulling up. That'd be
Do you reckon that'll become a mod where people put the straw hats on the parcel shelf?
Has to.
Right. So you put it there.
Depending.
Yeah, if you're going to do that now as, like, you know, a goof, we get a royalty.
Yeah.
My niece's first car I found for her years ago was a 240 G Volvo. Yeah, I delivered it to her with a hat on the parcel shelf, all set and ready to go.
Did you put it there or was it there?
I put it there.
Good.
That's great.
Scott, actually, I want to add, that was on my list, but Dave, we'll get to that one in a second. Scotty, any on your list before we keep going?
So on my list, I got the VN Commodore.
Oh.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, that was pretty nowhere for a lot of years, and now they're very sought after for good.
Now I I can't remember the last time I actually seen one on the road. It's been that long.
I saw in the VNSS they had Phoenix, was it Phoenix Red, and they had Atlas Gray, and they had White. I saw a red one. One of my students, his dad bought one from Queensland and restored it here, and he just picked him up from school and on club plates, and I'm like, it actually looked really good. I'm like, I haven't seen a clean VN in forever. I was actually taken back. I was like, wow, that's actually really nice.
Because I obviously don't know my Commodores too well. I'm just looking at VN Commodore. I'm like, if you saw that car, there is a 100% chance you'll find drugs in that car.
that car was the staple of you've made. If that car was on your driver, it was a staple of I've made bad life choices throughout my life. Like that was that car. But now you're right, Scotty. They are very few and far between. And the ones that remain are kind of good. Like they're actually kind of coming back. And they're worth money.
Later ones, but. Used to get them a lot around where I live, driving around, and VSs too. You'd always choose a VS over a VN. VSs look way better in every way. And there's, I'd see some VS SSs and stuff like that. They were always pretty cool. But the VNs were always, not cool. Just the V6 with the hole in the exhaust sound awful wherever they went.
Yeah.
Awful. And now they're just gone. And they're sort of, if you find a good one, you're like, ooh, all right.
There's one listed for $68,500 for a VNSS manual.
How much?
$68,500.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's not even a Group A.
Yeah, right under it, we've got a trashed out one for $2,200. The executive.
But, like Group A's are now, like, Group A SS's, like, in terms of, like, VNSS's were nowhere forever. That was a car that was just, they always kind of had their following, but they were nowhere in terms of pricing. Now they are, like, you shut the gates, you cannot touch those cars. Like they are ridiculously expensive.
I wonder how many just normal SS's they made.
It'd be actually cool to find that out. We should. Any of our listeners, hit us up. How many VNSSs did they make?
Yeah, just to have such a high price. I assume most of them just got smashed and wrapped around poles.
Poles, yeah.
At the moment, on Gold FM, they are restoring a VX2. Like, it's a gold one from factory, but they're restoring it to give it away. And if you write it, it's a slight tangent, but if you... The winner is someone who puts words to a song about the Commodore and puts it in. I think I should enter. But it's an 02. But I thought, God, that's a bit new, isn't it? Then I went, well, it's 22 years old. It's not really very new.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it's ages their demographic. Oh, no, Gold FM, you said.
Gold FM. Yeah, because it's a golden Holden. They wanted a golden Holden. So.
Gold FM play all the good songs now.
That's when you know you're old, Scotty.
I know.
Gold 104, what's it called? I'm promoting another radio station on this radio station. Great, was it Great Classic Hits? I forgot the name of the catchphrase, but anyway, we'll move on before I lose my job here at 98.9 Northwest FM.
If you Google just for something afterwards, something later when we're all off air, if you Google hit songs from 2004, which is now 20 years old, you'll be surprised how modern they sound.
Yeah, it's hard to believe like even cars from that era are that old. So like I used to think 20 year old cars were like from the 80s. No, that's
my MX-5 is 21 years old.
Ouch.
Like 4 more years and it's on Club Ridge.
Exactly.
Oh, dude, like my Typhoon's 20 years this year. That's I can't believe that car's 20 years old. I remember going to the motor show and seeing it. Like that's a scary proposition.
Oh, we should get rid of it.
No, it's
too old.
Too old. I can't flog it off to $50. Seems metal. David Prince, you were going to say 120Y, and we did mention that. What else was and you also mentioned a 240 Volvo 240. You know, Volvo 240s. But see, here's the thing: people that know Volvo 240s know that they're cool. And for me, a 240 has always been a kind of that niche cool, like a combi cool, where it's a car where. If you know, you know, and it's like, oh, it's 240, cool. Like, like that's, and they were cool for the reason that they were so kind of like old school, old person's car. And not many cars have been like Volvo 240 cool, if that makes sense. It's kind of like its own pocket. There's like cool, and then there's Volvo 240 cool. And then like that section is like, it's always kind of had that, you know, cult following, which is quite rare for a car, to be fair.
I've got a related thing on that, Matthew. So I saw this yesterday, you know, the Batuta Advocate, take the piss paper or whatever. It was a picture of a white 240 wagon with this pink head layabout next to it. Broke art school student finds the perfect $17,000 Volvo station wagon to complete his aesthetic. It's like, yeah, that's about right.
That's about right.
That's if he had half a brain,
he'd more honest a headline than the Australian, I'd say.
But like, it's funny though, because you guys, like, I don't know if you guys are knowing what I'm trying to say about Volvo 240 cool, but Volvo 240 cool has been a thing. Like, I've
seen.
But it was more of a cult cool.
It was a cult cool, yeah.
If the average person saw it, they'd be like,
it's an old Volvo.
Yeah, what the hell? Get this grandpa out of here. But now I think there's more of a general population appreciation. Absolutely. Especially with the hipsters.
Oh, heaps with the hipsters. Like, go down to Brunswick and you'll see Volvo 240s everywhere.
Single gear bikes. All of Volvos.
It's weird because my sister used to live in Brunswick West, and then I used to go through Brunswick, and I'd be like, Volvo 240 wagon, Volvo 240 sedan, Volvo 240, Volvo 240, and like they're everywhere, and they're beaten. A lot of them have got like the paint that burgundy's just faded to virtually nothing, but they still work. They're still on full registration, and they're still being driven. And you know, there's something that's got to be said for that. Like that's they've got a following that not many cars have. Like they've got like it's like a religion to them, I think. And I watched a video on Top Gear recently in Japan. They went and they've got a massive following in Japan. Volvo 240s like Volvo 240s are really sought after in Japan.
Are they?
Yeah, I'll link you guys the video. I'll link you guys the video after this. Like they're like, oh, they're simple in their aesthetic, and they're really cool, and they're like a non-frill lifestyle, and we like that. And I was like, you know what? I get it. I get why people kind of like these things. I reckon
the 740s and the 940s, the last rear wheel drive ones, are as cool now. I mean, they've reached the age. They're still very affordable compared to 240s, which seem to have gone a bit nuts. I'd certainly have a 740 wagon.
Oh, absolutely! Like a 740, like a late one. There was one that was on Queensland plates. Queensland. I was behind a green one, and this was no BS last week, and had the roof pot on it. The back end was on the ground because it was just loaded full of stuff. It was Queensland what's it called, European style plates, and it had had 740 in the plate. Like, it was a well looked after car. You could tell it was well loved, and he was just driving, you know, him and his wife through Melbourne. I'm like, that's cool. Like that's a very cool car. I get that. And I even like 850s. I think 850s. I think 850s are a bit different because they had that racing kind of pedigree in terms of they went racing and people were like, oh, the flying brick, you know. But like, you got to look at the 240 and the 740s and stuff before that to really get a good understanding of how cool they kind of are. What else is on your list, gentlemen?
I had we've already discussed Magnas ad nauseum.
No, yeah.
And hashtag Magna 40th for next year, Andrew, if you're listening, we're onto it. So
I've got some updates on that.
Okay. I actually had a Honda. I had the Honda HR-V. I think we have discussed it on the podcast before, but the original HR-V that came out in like 99, I think, not the most handsomest car they've ever produced, I don't think. And I think, Ed, you actually described them as pond scum at one time, I think.
Yes. When they were launched, particularly in that yellowy, goldy, metallic colour, I said, what the hell are Honda doing? That's pond scum. And, yeah, it's been my constant little label for that car ever since. But then I had one a while back and I really liked it.
Yep.
As we said at the time, brilliant ground clearance, brilliant approach and departure angle, even though it's not four-wheel drive in the true sense of the word. You can go over things in that car. I like a car to be able to drive over things. And like gutters and garden beds and kangaroos, ideally. And then it had the EK running gear, which is incredibly reliable. Nice manual gearbox. The CVT was dreadful. Don't touch a CVT. But the manuals were great. And the interior is really hard wearing, very visible. You could chuck stuff in them. They're very square in the back, so they're very practical. So it's just, there's a lot going for one of those, and they're worth nothing.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that one. Scotty, I got one for you. R31s. Now, the whole Skyline thing is a big thing. Now, 31s weren't cool forever. They weren't a cool car. Especially Pintar.
Why would you get a 31 when you could pick up a 32 or 33?
Correct. You know? Now 31s are like really sought after and they're really kind of cool. I think they've come in on that wave of like, it's got the stovetop tail lights and like even the Pintaras, because they're quite literally the same car just with a four cylinder, like a 31 wagon, which is, I think it's Australian only, the 31 wagon, right? Like that we designed that here. A 31 wagon's a cool thing. Like your mate's got one.
Yeah. Daniel's had two in his time. I think he sold the old one when the engine blew. He bought it for, I think his dad bought it for like $400 and they sold it for $400 with a blown engine this time. And then, a couple of years back, he ended up buying one from Echuca that didn't have any compression.
Yeah.
So he's working on it slowly but surely. But yeah, he's a wagon man. His daily drive is also a wagon. So
yeah.
There's something special about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, I feel, again, the R31s was in some cases were cool. I thought they were cool. Like when I was in New Zealand in the 90s, we actually had a family friend that had, he had the one with the stovetops.
Yeah.
The R31. And we were like, oh, it's a Skyline. We're like, a Skyline. Yeah. As if we knew.
Any last ones before we get to the quiz, James?
I think it was, I was going to add, I think it was the 80s design. People didn't really like the boxy look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's making a massive comeback. So I think, also, obviously, the Fox body Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
No one liked that.
I was thinking about that, but I still don't like it.
No, I'm a fan.
Like, I know you're a fan. Exactly. That's why I don't like it. Because I was like, do I like it yet? No. It stays in the box.
Dude, like, boxy is cool. Boxy is cool.
Boxy is definitely cool. Like, yeah. Especially when you consider some of the bubbly stuff we had in the 90s, especially. Like, it's better than that.
Yeah. Ready for the quiz, gentlemen. Now, it's, you know how it works. It's 10 questions plus some bonus questions.
And you only get 10 seconds to answer the question, Ed. No, saying Ed and bumming around.
Don't start with that shenanigans, Alum.
So,
sorry, Carter.
We've got Alum, we've got Ed, we've got David, and we've got Scotty playing tonight for the chocolates. Now, there is 10 questions plus some bonus questions, and there's a couple of ads, advertisements in this list as well.
Advertisements,
yeah. So like I'll read the car ad, and then you can guess what car it is. So let's crack on, gentlemen. Question one: Ford CEO Jim Farley said what earlier this week about Ford Australia?
Ed.
Ed's got in there first.
I thought I got in there first.
I think he said that they could have pulled out of Australia, like they were thinking or toying with pulling out of Australia.
That is absolutely correct. They were genuinely...
But a few years back,
They were genuinely going to pull out of Australia during the Falcons, end of run. And then Ranger was a smash hit, and now they're staying. Question two. What was Toyota's first twin cam vehicle?
David. It'd have to be the 2000 GT, wouldn't it?
That is absolutely correct. It is the 2000 GT.
We know those cars, Manny, don't you? Don't we?
You, me, and Sean Connery. So that's... Question three. A 2007 Honda CR-V from America has recently been put back in the socials very, very recently. For what reason?
Sorry, put back in the...
In the social medias for what reason? It's been shared all over again. And I remember when this happened, but it's been all over the car socials, and people are talking about it currently. Why?
David, I'll have a guess.
David?
Has it done a huge mileage?
I'll give it to you. It's done a million miles. Well
done. A million miles? 2017, and it's done a million miles.
No, 27.
2007.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, good old K24. Question four. MG's performance models in their new range are called the what?
Oh. Ed. Excite?
Incorrect.
Alum. The MGS.
MGS is incorrect.
I could think of a few words to describe them, but none of them are probably right.
None of them are appropriate for 8:19 on a.
No, we're now on Car Talk After Dark.
Car After Dark at the moment. So
yeah,
it's okay. No,
I'll have a guess.
Yeah.
Zed.
No. Scotty Doe?
No, we got nothing.
It's called the X Power. Their high performance range is called the X Powers.
X Power?
Well, instead of 74 kilowatts, they have 85 kilowatts.
Correct. Correct, Amundo. No, I actually went in the MG4 X Power with Riz recently. It bloody hammered. It was a fast thing. But anyway, that's another story.
Drive by BMW from
yes. They're trying to get that connection back, you know, that they had a while ago. Question 5. A new record for a non-heritage Victorian plate was set very recently. How much did the plate sell for? I'll give closest to.
Ooh.
So non-heritage Victorian plate. So it's got a record for that.
Alum.
$870,000. $870K, says Alum.
Scott.
$650, says Scott.
$922,
says Edward.
I'll go $600.
$600. You guys are way off, by the way. It was $230,000. But David gets the chocolates there. Bonus question. What were the digits of this plate?
Alum. It was 8008.
Well, I wish it was. I genuinely wish it was. But you know what, Alum? I'll give you 0.5 because you're not far off. So I'll give you 0.5. How does that sound?
Excellent.
David.
For the other 0.5, we'll go 8888.
Incorrect.
Well, that means it must be 8008S.
Incorrect.
No, 5. I don't know.
Incorrect.
I know I cheated on your calculator at school, Scotty.
Yeah.
Edward, you in or out?
No, I don't know.
It was 6 8s in a row. Bonus question. Why is this such an important plate?
David. Because 8 in Chinese is luck or fortune. What is that?
Well done. So in Chinese and some other Asian cultures, 8 is considered a lucky number and is similar to the word for generating wealth and fortune in Mandarin.
And it's because of it's an infinite flow, the figure 8. You know, it's like the energy flows.
The chi.
Chi.
It's chi. You know? Feng shui.
Infinite flow.
Question 6. What vehicle has broken the unofficial lap time on this weekend at Mount Panorama Bathurst? Scott.
It was that electric Ford van.
Yep, you get 2 points because that was the bonus question too. So well done. Score check. Alan 0.5, Ed 1, Scotty 2, David currently leading on 4. Question 7. Hyundai have this week announced what major change to their N brand?
David. It's going, there will be no longer petrol powered N's. They're going electric.
Oh, I'll give you 0.5.
Alum. They're on hybrid.
Incorrect, Alum.
I thought David was right.
David's spot on, but you missed the second part to that answer, David.
Sorry, the second part of the question is that the I-20 and the I-30 are being dropped.
Incorrect. They are being dropped, but there's a second part to that.
Okay.
Scotty or Edward, you've got it.
No, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
They're no longer selling end combustion engine powered cars in Europe only currently.
Oh, okay.
So
I did read that. God damn it. I remember I read comments about it and people were whinging.
As you do. Question 8, staying with Hyundai N. The new Ioniq 5N is set to have how much is set to be how much in Australian dollary dues? Closest to, I'll give.
100,000.
100K, says Edward.
84,000.
84,000, says Alan.
Scott.
Scott? 89,990.
Driveway, no more to pay.
No, driveway, no more to pay, with free air. And David Prince.
Oh, I'll go 92.
92. Edward Bunton, your closest. It's 111,000 plus on
roads. Whoa, what a rip.
111.
Plus on roads. Plus on roads.
Oh, what a rip. Howie.
Bonus question. How many kilowasps does it have? I'll give closest to again. It's not as much as I expected it to have, but it's still quite powerful.
Alum.
242, says Alum.
I will go 350.
355. Five, yep.
I'll go 275.
275. And Edward?
I'm going to go 288.
288. It has 478.
Did you say horsepower or kilowatts?
Kilowatts, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So Scotty gets the chocolates for that one.
Yikes. So how's that low in your estimate again?
Because because other electric cars have got like 500 and plus.
Which ones are we talking about?
Like Teslas and stuff, right? Like that's just...
You don't know. Were you talking like a base model Tesla? Or like a base model Y is like what? Not even 200?
Oh, about 250, yeah. I thought they were. They've got a bit of go. Like the performances are like well over 300.
Yeah, the performances are, but the performances are then like 100 grand plus.
Yeah, that's true.
So, how are they measuring them in the electric cars? Just chuck them straight on a pano or?
I assume so. And it'll have like some bullshit amount of torque too. Like it's just nuts.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Did you guys see the video of Keiichi Tsuchiya just drifting it around Sydney Motorsport Park? It was nuts.
Yeah,
was
pretty... he approves it.
Approved it.
Mm-hmm.
Question 9. Okay, this is our first of our two car advertisement brochures. Blistering performance. That's what you can expect from the new blank 335 blank. Under the bonnet lies a supercharged all-aluminium V8 capable of delivering a massive 330 alum.
This is a FPV GT.
It is an FPV GT. Well done, alum.
Ooh.
So massive amounts of torque, 575 newton meters. It makes it the most powerful V8 FPV ever. And that's, you've got that one right.
You said 335 and then you said supercharged. I'm like, that's it.
That's it, yeah.
Well, that was such a beautiful sounding engine, Matt.
It was a magnificent.
It's just the engine. Stock exhaust. Oh,
they were tough. They were a tough car.
Yeah.
All right. Question 10. Timeless Italian styling by Pininfarina and breathtaking performance are all the hallmarks of the blank, blank, blank. It is blank, the classic European blank. Yeah. It is a classic European alum.
Maserati Gran Turismo.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
Ed.
Peugeot 406 Coupe.
Incorrect. It's the classic
Peugeot European 406 Coupe.
Incorrect.
Hey, you can't have too many guesses, Ed.
Where was I? It is the classic.
Hang on, I must be lagging. I must be lagging.
Because
he only said it once.
Hmm.
I said it once.
Said twice for us.
It's the classic European performance convertible. Spider offers the choice of a free-spinning 2-liter JTS four-cylinder engine.
David. That would be the. Alfa Romeo Brera.
Incorrect.
An Alfa though.
With revolutionary direct petrol injection or the bellowing Scott.
Is it the Alfa? They call it the GTV.
I'll give it to you. It's the GTV and the Spider. Yeah, I'll give that to you, Scotty. Well done.
Done, Scotty.
Good pick up. All right. Oh, that is the quiz. Score check, gentlemen. Alan at 1.5. Edward on 2. Scotty on 4. Tonight's winner by a tiny skin of his teeth, 0.5 is Mr. David Prince. Well done.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Well done.
Could have been anyone's game.
It was anybody's game. Tough questions in there, gentlemen, as there always is. Well done, Scotty, for getting the GTV and the spot. I'm happy with that. That's a good response.
I feel great. I apologize because I should have got that.
Well, you know, you're live on air, David Prince. If you're listening,
it's annoying when you can picture it in your head too.
Yeah, it is. You're like, I know what it is, but I can't remember the name of it. I think that's a podcast, gents.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you. Let's do some plugs. Edward Bunting and David Prince, you guys do a podcast.
Yes, it's called Auto Retro, and we talk to guests about the cars of their lives. Series 2 is underway, and with a couple more recordings, we'll be soon complete. Stay tuned on Spotify and, of course, YouTube, where you can see us doing it live.
Absolutely. Awesome. Scotty Doe, Golf Tip of the Week.
Golf Tip of the Week is not about me, but it was about my brother playing. He's a member at a golf course. He's been playing a bit. And all of a sudden, he just had a terrible round and shot like over 100. Oh. And now he's just gotten in his head. He's stuck. He hasn't gone back and played yet. So
he's got golfer's block.
Yeah, be careful of that.
He's got the yips.
Yeah, just I think the problem is then you start changing your swing and changing and adjusting everything. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Just go back out there again. Just do what you did before. You're just getting in.
So in other words, Scotty, if it's getting tough, just play your normal game. You'll be right.
Exactly right. Also, like Subaru up for sale. Buy it. negotiable, obviously, on price. Meg, always. Meg.
Obviously.
Or nearest offer.
Maybe I should buy it. I've bought a car off Alan. Have I bought a car off you, Scott? No, I haven't. Yeah, I've bought a car off David Prince. Hang on. Have I bought a car for you, Maddie?
You haven't.
No.
You didn't want my LTD, so like
that's, I know. When it got down to 2,800 recently, I was kind of half tempted.
You just got a low boy of $1,000 and you'd probably end up with it too, to be fair.
Maybe come with a roadie if you like.
And maybe I'll come have a test drive, Scott.
Yeah, anytime.
And then I'll be like, it's overheating. It's overheating.
I promise it doesn't have that issue.
Alamdeep Singh, our boy.
Yes. If you'd like to know more about the electric car space or what new cars are going for, hit our man up, Rizzy Ross, at carloop.com.au. You can also find him on Facebook, facebook.com/carloopau.
And we are also on.
On the magical website that is YouTube. All of our podcast previous episodes are going up, along with some future video content and all new podcasts eventually once we get up to date. Mm-hmm. So subscribe to us on Car Talk Podcast, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you can just search Car Talk with Matty J on YouTube and you'll find us.
Absolutely. Like and share our Facebook pages, Car Talk, TRQ, Matty J. If you're missing any previous episodes, they're all up on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasting app. So don't forget to subscribe or rate and review to us there. Check out our merch, go to our Teespring store, go to teespring.com, type in Car Talk store, support the show there. Also support the show by becoming a patron to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Car Talk Podcast. Gentlemen, honor as always, and I'll see you next time. Take it easy.
See ya.
Bye-bye.